Section 7, Taking Refuge in the Buddha. In the introduction to this paper, I spoke of the Chinese poems I wrote at Quatermain shortly after the first ordinations into the Western Buddhist Order. These were by no means my first poems, nor were they to be my last. I have in fact been writing poetry of a sort since I was 11 or 12, and probably have not finished writing it, even yet. Quite a few of my poems give expression to thoughts and feelings which, for one reason or another, could find an outlet in no other way. Thus, whatever their deficiencies as poetry, they may be of interest and value as an indication of my state of mind at the time of writing. As I have commented in the preface to The Enchanted Heart, with regard to the poems selected from my poetic output for the years 1946 to 1976 for inclusion in that volume, many of them, if not the majority, have only a biographical, even a sentimental, interest. They give expression to passing moods and fancies, as well as to deeper experiences and insights. They also reflect my responses to my surroundings. As such, they constitute a sort of spiritual autobiography, sketchy indeed, but perhaps revealing, or at least suggesting, aspects of my life which may not otherwise be known. End of quote. This is certainly true of a poem entitled Taking Refuge in the Buddha, which I wrote when I had been a bhikshu for just over 2 years. The poem was written in Kalimpong, where for the last 3 years I had been doing my best to obey my teacher Kashyapji's injunction to stay there and work for the good of Buddhism. Neither in my work for Buddhism nor in my personal life had I received the help and cooperation to which I felt I was entitled, and the poem gave expression to my deep disappointment and frustration. The circumstances which led to its production are briefly described in the diary I was then keeping. The entry for Monday, 26th of January, reads, Puja and Meditation. The remarks Joe made yesterday caused me to feel that I had no earthly refuge, that none understood me, or sympathized with the aim I was striving to achieve. In this mood, a line which I had composed some months ago as the refrain of a poem came into my mind, and during breakfast I composed the first 1.5 verses of Taking Refuge in the Buddha. Then came Sachin, and we read 7 of Shakespeare's sonnets, and studied a chapter of logic, on which I dictated him 7 pages of notes. After he had gone, I completed the poem. End of quote. The Joe referred to in this extract was an elderly and extremely cantankerous Canadian Buddhist who had settled in Kalimpong with the intention of helping me in my work. Sachin was a talented Nepalese college student to whom I gave tuition in English and logic, and for whose benefit I subsequently wrote my essay, Advice to a Young Poet. Taking Refuge in the Buddha is too long to be quoted in full, but its 7 8-line stanzas constituted a resounding declaration of my heartfelt conviction that for me there could be no refuge in the beauties of nature, no refuge in the world of literature and the arts, no refuge in politics, no refuge in professional or commercial activity, no refuge in Christianity, Islam, or Hinduism, no refuge in the observances of conventional Buddhism, no refuge anywhere in conditioned existence, and no refuge even in a nirvana conceived simply as the opposite of samsara. For me, there could be refuge only at the feet of the Buddha, above the dualism of subject and object. The fact that in this poem I spoke only of taking refuge in the Buddha did not, of course, mean that I did not likewise take refuge in the Dharma and the Sangha. It simply meant that my taking refuge in the Dharma and the Sangha was contained within my taking refuge in the Buddha, even as the Dharma jewel and the Sangha jewel were themselves contained within the Buddha jewel. As Gampopa points out in his Jewel Ornament of Liberation, the English translation of which I read eagerly on its appearance 5 years later, the ultimate refuge is the Buddha alone. He is the ultimate refuge because he possesses the Dharmakaya and the devotees of the three paths, i.e. the path of the Shravakas, the Pracheka Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, also find their fulfillment in him by obtaining the final pure Dharmakaya. End of quote. If one asks whether the Dharma and the Sangha are not the ultimate refuge, the answer is in the negative, for, as Gampopa goes on to explain, basing himself on the Mahayana Uttara Tantra, the Dharma that is taught is only a collection of words and letters, and has to be discarded like a raft when we have reached the other shore. The Dharma that is understood has two aspects, the truth of the path and the truth of the cessation of misery. The former is a product and not eternal, hence is deceptive and no refuge, while the latter has no real existence, being compared by the Shravakas to the extinction of a lamp. The Sangha itself also has taken refuge in the Buddha, because it was afraid of samsara, and so is no ultimate refuge. End of quote. In short, refuge is only one, the means is threefold. The refuges having been split up into three simply as a way of attracting people of different spiritual capacities. Thus, even though I did not know it at the time, the conviction to which taking refuge in the Buddha gave expression, the conviction, namely, that for me there could be refuge only in the Buddha, was fully in accordance with the best Buddhist tradition. When I came to transcribe the poem into my poetry notebook, I placed at its head, by way of a motto, the words Nati me saranang anyang, Buddho me saranang varang. For me there is no other refuge. The Buddha is the supreme refuge. These words were a quotation from the Tiratnavandana, or salutation to the three jewels, which I had recited as part of my daily office ever since becoming a Shramanera. Shortly after my bhikshu ordination, I had, in fact, rendered the Vandana itself into English verse. To all the Buddhas, or Dharmas, or Sanghas, of the past, to all the Buddhas yet to be, and all the Buddhas that now are, my worship flows unceasingly. No other refuge than the wake, or the law, or the brotherhood. Refuge supreme there is for me. Oh, by the virtue of this truth, may grace abound and victory. Though I recited the Vandana in Pali and not in English, the words, oh, by the virtue of this truth, may grace abound and victory, haunted me in a way that the corresponding words in Pali never did. With their distant echoes of Bunyan, and still more distant echoes of St. Paul, the words, may grace abound and victory, were not quite a literal translation of the words, Hotu me jayamangalang. But I thought they captured their spirit very well indeed. Whether or not this was the case, there is no doubt that the fact that I was reciting the Tiratnavandana every day and repeating, may grace abound and victory, under my breath on all sorts of occasions, contributed to the growth of the feeling and the conviction which, at a time of disappointment and frustration, found expression in taking refuge in the Buddha.